Blog Talk Radio.
And a very pleasant good evening to you and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest.
Twelve point three.
Has been extremely exciting so far. Look at the work of Russell, and on the weekend, Barbados Trident fast bowler bowling beautifully. Oh, what a fine spell by Raymond Reefer, picking up 5 for 20 as the Tridents went into Guyana country and won. The last time they were there last year, they were beaten, and it really has been pretty exciting so far. And of course, we now travel to Sabina Park for a big battle this evening. I say big, and I really maybe shouldn't say big, because the fact of the matter is that one of the teams participating, the St. Lucia Stars, they have not won a game in 13 matches. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. They're going to be playing, of course, against the Talawas, who would want to live up to their name. Without any further ado, let's go up to Kingston, Jamaica, and talk to Wayne.
Sorry to drive down, and I don't want to get into pockets where you lose me and so on. So I decided to stay back to entertain this interview. But yes, the excitement is there. I went down to the Weaver office today to pick up some tickets, and I could feel the buzz around. You know, a lot of action going on, people buying tickets and cars all over the place, everybody running up and down like mad and trying to get tickets and so on. So it appears as if it's going to be some fireworks later, and people are looking forward to it.
The promotion has been heavy in Jamaica?
It has been, going into this game, especially after that amazing innings by Andre Russell to wrestle the Talawas out of the jaws of defeat and actually won that game. An incredible innings, and it has set the intensity very high here, and everyone is looking and hoping that he'll replicate that tonight, and that not necessarily that the Talawas will be in another precarious position, but he'll go out and he'll bat well, and he'll entertain them quite well. So they are really looking forward to it. It has generated tremendous interest, considering the fact that it was the TPL kicked off in Trinidad and Tobago with those sellout crowds. And, I mean, of course, Trinidad winning that first game. And, of course, you know, the excitement and watching it on television with so many persons in the stands and so on. It does create a position where everybody wants to replicate that.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't keep you too much longer because I know you've got to go down to Sabina. But, I mean, let's talk about Andrew Russell. Let's put that innings in context. First of all, before he batted, he picked up a hat trick. And when he came to the crease, the Talawas were in all kinds of trouble. They were 41 for 5. The rate required was 13.5. And you know what? He made 121 from 49 balls, 13 sixes and 6 fours. That was absolutely stunning.
Absolutely stunning. And it tells you sometimes the thin line between love and hate, as they say. And I mean, look at the situation where he was dropped. I think it was off the first ball,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, he was dropped, and that would have been game, match, set, and whatever they call it. The game would have been over. But they said catches win matches. So therefore, with all the introduction of technology and all the new ways of preparing yourselves for a particular game, it still comes down to natural cricket. You still have to go on the field and execute. And at the field of taking that catch, we would not be talking about that today. He got this opportunity, and he made good of it, and he was just amazing after that. He made the Trinidad team with top-class bowlers look so ordinary. Mm-hmm. He was hitting sixes in his sleep. I mean, it was unbelievable when I saw him hit the first six. I was saying, well, okay, he's going to enjoy himself, and who knows, the Talawas might get to 100. But little did we know that there'll be a 169 run partnership with Kenan Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
That just turned the game into Talawa's way, and in the end it was total belief.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, it actually went down to the final over. Two balls, I think, and three balls into the final over, which was to me an anticlimax situation because I thought they would have won from in the 18th over or the 19th over, but it actually went to the 20th. But it was just one of those innings that I was happy to be in front of my television. I would have much preferred to be actually in the park when he was hitting those balls, but to be at home where I got the benefit of replays and so on, and listening to the commentary and so on, it was just out of this world. I was happy to have sat in front of my television set and actually watched the game.
How popular is Andrew Russell in Jamaica?
That's a very good question. He is popular in terms of being on the field. He's almost aloof when he's off the field. He keeps himself. He doesn't do a lot of interviews.
Mm.
He is not a person that is seen in the social network where he's seen all over the place partying and so on. We don't see that of him. Like a Chris Gayle with his monumental personality, and he's just out there having fun with his broad smile. He's not like that. He's almost shy, and people just love to see him in the park. They're expecting things from him, whether he's batting, bowling, or fielding. They're hoping that he'll do something magical. But outside of that, he is very subdued, and I don't know that he's real popular in Jamaica outside of being on the field.
Is he a Kingston man?
No, he's actually from Maypen.
Oh, Maypen?
Ola Arbor to be exact.
Okay.
And he still lives there, my understanding. He sets up his restaurant in Ola Arbor. He plays in the SDC competition, a very popular, the most popular cricket competition in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
He plays in that, and he represents Ola Arbor when he's available. He's still, you could say, out of town. I don't like to say countryman. He's out of town. He's an out of town guy.
Oh, I see. And which club he plays for in Jamaica, if he plays at all at the highest level?
I don't know. That's a very good question. It has been so long.
Mm.
I think he maybe played for St. Catherine.
St. Catherine, huh?
If I'm not mistaken. I think he has played for St. Catherine in the past. But I know that now he no longer plays Senior Cup and so on. So when he plays in the SDC T20 competition, he plays for Ola Arbor. And he's a good guy as well. He takes care of his friends. You know, he has a number of friends around him.
Mm-hmm.
He looks after them well. Kenan Lewis is one of his almost like brother-like friendship. And he looks after them well. And he's a very nice guy, very approachable, almost shy-like in his approach. A very humble guy. He doesn't behave as if he has made it and he's on top of the world. He's still very down-to-earth and very, almost, as I said, shy. He'll be here and you don't know he's in the park because he's going to sit by himself. He's going to hang with his friends. He's not going to make everyone know that he's actually there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I appreciate that about him, that his old exploits on the field with all the money and traveling the world, that he has kept him humble.
Tell me about Kenard Lewis. I mean, you know, you were talking about certainly the performance of Russell, but there was this man, Lewis, who did a wonderful job, 41 for the loss of five, but he was a really good partner. Tell us about this young man. He's a big, strong man.
I can tell you, to be honest, I'm a bit disappointed in Kenan Lewis over the years because when I was a senior selector, we actually selected him once. He came with this big reputation. He had on a lot less weight then. I think he has...
Oh, he's a big guy. He's quite a bit of Akin Saltfish, it would appear.
And some Afu Yam, you know.
Yes, of course, in Jamaica.
Jerk pork or whatever. But he has put a lot of weight. And, I mean, the first time when Murray Litteran came to Talawa's, right?
Mm.
They were playing some practice matches, and that's all he got to prominence. You know where the cricket rest in his box is, right?
Right.
He was hitting Marlitton up in that box.
What?
So far, he took Marlitton to pieces in some practice matches, and everybody said, "Who is this guy? He's known to hit the ball hard and far, and can be dangerous. He's almost an X factor." And then he just, you know,
went off the ball, yes. Indeed.
We just don't hear about him. I've always asked about him. So to see him back the way he did to make 51 is totally out of character because I think he benefited from the exploits of Andre Russell in that innings. And I'm hoping that with this innings will propel him forward and give him the confidence to really demonstrate his true talent because if he's batting well, he can be very, very, he can be as dangerous as Andre Russell.
Yeah.
He does not have the confidence right now. I'm hoping that with this 51, and when he got out, that he'll propel him forward and he'll start be a little more expressive in his innings and a bit more consistent. And also, he'll also lose some weight.
Yeah, indeed. Just eat a little bit more,
a little less.
Well, I was going to say more vegetables and less yams, but he's certainly a very big guy indeed. Is he a countryman?
He is. He's from Westmoreland.
Oh, Westmoreland, deep in rural Jamaica.
Cleveland Davidson.
Yes.
Parish.
Yes.
Cleveland Davidson is from Westmoreland as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
But he has played a lot of cricket around the carpet area. He also plays for Clarendon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In those T20 competitions, if I'm not mistaken. So, there you go.
All right, good night. So you have Badre, Zampa, Miller, Ross Taylor, the captain. Does the team have what it takes to go deep into this competition?
To be honest with you, mm-hmm. I have not really, because I'm not really involved at that level anymore. You know, I read when I can read. I'm not a JCF member. We really don't get involved a lot with the CPL. And, you know, we're focused on our members, nevertheless, playing in the CPL. But I have not been paying attention too much to the team itself. And I've been to the breakfast opening, that they had with Milo, their sponsor, and Melbourne Cricket Club. And I was there with them. And, you know, Ramnery Sawan is actually the assistant coach of that
team. Yes, he is. Mm-hmm.
And they seem to have a balanced team. They think they have a balanced team that they can go far, if not win this tournament. I mean, Ross Taylor is a big-time player, and therefore he bats well and he's on song. Andre Russell coming down in order with all the other batsmen around. I mean, Andre McCarthy and so on. So maybe they can do some damage, but they still have to go out there and execute. Because the way they display their top half of their batting display in that game against Trinidad and Tobago is not exactly exuding a lot of confidence, and they'll have to up the ante and don't depend on Andre Russell, because the type of player Andre Russell is not going to give you 1 in 3 innings highlight in the place. He's going to be able to give you 1 in 6, 1 in 7. So therefore, the other batters will know that they have to come good, and there needs to be hit the ground running and start being a lot more consistent if they're going to go deep in the tournament.
Jermaine Blackwood is quite an attacking player at Test, but I get the impression he isn't very highly regarded in the Jamaican short form white ball cricket. Can you explain this?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very good question, actually. Because when I was a selector, I go back to those days, when we selected him in the NatGeek, or whatever it was at the time, Super 50, he went to Trinidad and was not selected in one game.
Mm-hmm.
And when we selected the 4-day team, he was in the team, and I took him into Spider Park. At George Ellison. I had a long talk with him about his abilities and how far he can get into cricket. And I told him then that he's good enough to play Test cricket. And he played against New Zealand a few months down the road. But I had a discussion with him recently again at Spider Park over lunch, where I reminded him of all those discussions and the fact that his all-round game is so good. He's brilliant in the field, he does a bit of bowling, and he can be destructive at the bat. But for some reason, he's very inconsistent and up and down. I know he's no longer in the West Indies setup. He's just kind of playing in England when West Indies senior team is actually playing in the Caribbean. He's very committed based on what he's saying, and he's coming back, hitting the ground running. I think he's only involved in 3 games because he's cover for a particular player. After the 3rd game, he'll be out. But he's very committed to going into the 50 overs tournament in October and really make himself useful again, and he's hoping to get into the team to go to the World Cup. So he's very committed. It sounds that way. But it's a very good question he asked about is you know, not think highly of in the shorter version, because it's his fault. He has not been a consistent, and his game is tailor-made, I think, to play those shorter versions. But for some reason, he's not getting it together. I mean, apparently very committed now that he's going to make the change and he's going to move forward.
Okay, just before you go quickly, a note with interest, you said you're no longer a member of the JCA. Did you say that?
Well, I was on the board 2 years ago.
Right.
And Billy Evans remained as president, so therefore I was on the opposite team and our team lost. So I am not involved at that level. I'm involved with Kensington Cricket Club along with my friend Wavell Lines, and I mean, we're still doing in the trenches, you know, trying to develop youngsters and try and give them an opportunity to move forward. At least we're still in the game, but at the national level, I'm not.
So are you saying that you don't want to work with Billy Haven? Is that what you're saying?
No, Andrew, where in my statement did I ever make such statement? I wanted to...
I think you were inferring that.
When I just made my statement, maybe I nodded off a little bit. So bring me back on track. When did I just intimate that anything?
I thought you were inferring that.
Came out of left field.
All right, well, I wouldn't trouble you anymore. So you expect a big crowd down at Savannah Park, and you expect, of course, the Talibans to win.
Well, we're expecting, no doubt. I'm just sorry that this is not, we're not playing against St. Kitts where I get to watch Chris Gayle tonight, because
yes.
I will not be at Savannah Park tomorrow because I'm going to be in Montego Bay. So I'm going to miss the game tomorrow. Can you imagine?
You can imagine.
Postpone
the Montego Bay trip?
I wish I could, Andrew. Trust me. It's not important to me. So I really have to go. And I'm very sorry that I'm going to miss the game. But we're hoping that we win both games. The Jamaicans are very upset that the Talibans, three of their games were played in Miami. People talking about boycotting.
Only two matches. I mean, of course, your owner, you know, he's up there. But I mean, it's sad that you're only going to have two matches at Semina.
But I blame the spectators, because last year it was embarrassing, if you ask me.
Yeah, the crowds weren't that big.
The turnout sparsely. It was not good. And therefore, I said it in my interview that they are to be blamed, because they didn't come out and support the team last year. And if you're going to have a boycott, it simply means that you're not a supporter. They need to go out in their numbers. I can't imagine that the Talibans would be playing three games in Miami at the stadium full last year in those games, and therefore they need to come and support the team in a meaningful way and hope that they'll move on. So let's see. If they come out in their numbers, I'm sure the owners will look fierce.
So in 30 seconds, you expect a good crowd at Sabina Park this evening?
It appears that way, based on what I saw.
You're not sure, Wayne? Are they boycotting up there?
Andrew always likes to say, let me be clear, our Prime Minister.
Yes, I know he says it all the time. Let me be clear.
I'm going to borrow his phrase. Let me be clear. When I went to Savannah Park, I felt the energy today. There were a lot of persons lining up buying tickets. So let's hope it transcends into a full stadium come tonight.
All right. So okay, all the best to you. Enjoy the rest of your evening. That's
my
Wayne
pleasure.
Lewis.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Wayne Lewis, of course, the former Jamaica batsman. In fact, I was in Sabina Park a couple of years ago. Malcolm Marshall to Lewis, first ball bowl off stump. He never, ever will live that down, but he's a wonderful man. All right, let's pause for business calls. Pearson tonight, and of course young Nikhil, I think he's maybe somewhere up in the White House there with the president. He is on holiday, and his fist is not really taken. In fact, it's just as tall as Jamal Smith has come in to the studios. Of course, we've been hearing him. He did a test match recently when the last test match was played at Kensington Oval. Did a wonderful job, has had the experience of playing at the regional level. And let me say, good evening to you, Jamal Smith. Nice to have you in the studio.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to your listeners.
Good. Your overall view of the CPL so far?
Fantastic start so far for the CPL. I always believe that the CPL is the marketing tool for the Caribbean T20 cricket at this moment. And glad to see the stars or some of the guys that were out of the winning World Cup West Indies team are starting to show their mettle and their worth.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the tournament will go from strength to strength, and we will obviously unearth some talent that we haven't seen before or we know has the ability to, you know, to move on to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we've had stunning performances. We just spoke about Andrew Russell. But, I like Raymond Reef as a cricketer, because I think he's one of those cricketers that knows the game. That's important, because I've argued for a long time that sometimes we don't know the game. But you see it when he bats. I mean, he bowls, and what a good performance for the Tridents the other evening against a side that you don't go to Dan and beat the Amazon Warriors that easily.
Well, obviously, Raymond Reefer has been doing well for the Amazon in other tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was interesting, the Joe Factor.
Right.
Jason Holder uses troops well.
Mm-hmm.
He realized that it was a night where Raymond Reefer could come in and bowl his cutters and get the ball going, because obviously he couldn't go to Cairns being the wrist
no.
and all. especially as I said, with Joe Foster. So Raymond came in there and he did what Raymond does. He uses his thoughts, mm-hmm. you understand, because he's not as quick as one would imagine. But again, the cutters and bowling, especially remember he got out Hetmyer,
mm-hmm.
you know, the little cutter and making him hit it to the biggest side of the ground. And that's what Raymond is known for, getting in there and doing his job. Once he knows his role, once mm-hmm. his role is explained to him, he carried that out.
And of course, he produced a slow delivery to Steve Rutherford, who threatened briefly and got him caught behind. I thought it was clever bowling.
Yes, clever bowling again. As I said, that's his game. He understands, you know, his field places. If you watch him, he tinkers a lot with the short third man and the fine leg as well to suggest that he will bowl a cutter or a short ball or a full white ball. You know, Raymond knows what he's about, and he's always big on a dot ball. Where you're going to get that dot ball from,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he did. He mm-hmm. executed.
Okay, we got a call already. 44179. Let's take the first call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Good evening to everyone there.
Good evening.
The question is here. Three questions they got.
Sure.
Because it's out there on the ground already, but I ain't hear no one. It is cricket session speaking about it. The young gentleman who is serving a ban that is currently playing for the Tridents. The international teams outside refuse to touch him with a 20-foot pole.
Ooh.
I am not going to call any names on our club, right? Yet, in the Caribbean, where is that they could have looked for some youngster? Because we have a lot of them around here
that
could have actually filled that gap, whether we win or we lose.
Mm-hmm.
It sends a message mm-hmm. to a lot of youngsters around here that despite that you have done wrong, and you are serving, or you do some sort of infraction
mm-hmm.
in the game, you can leave and go someplace else and be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't expect you all to be able to explain it because you all ain't really the selectors or the persons who did it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm looking at is that why wasn't it, mm-hmm. or why didn't any person try to look for some of our Caribbean youngsters
mm-hmm.
to give them an opportunity to upgrade themselves
mm-hmm.
or to be seen,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a better light? Mm-hmm. Because even as I say,
so call it what you're saying, that you would not have picked Steve Smith.
Correct. Well. Not only me, as I said, I said it's on the ground. I don't know if you all heard already or what it was. They're wondering why would anybody in the Caribbean touch him for 20 football? Because it's going to have repercussions later. They're actually punishing some person, and we here saying, well, you know, it ain't really nothing. So what message is it sending? And they're going to repercussions later on.
Dr. Ford is an administrator. You think the caller's got a reasonable point?
Well, I guess if we can loosely use the word cricket morals, I guess he would have a point from that
mm-hmm.
perspective. But the, you know, the framework for his ban does not preclude him from playing in this tournament, just as he did
mm-hmm.
in the previous T20 that he was involved in. So there's no infraction, you know, relating to breaching the ban that's on him now.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I can see his viewpoint. But I don't see any repercussions for the franchise or the cricket West Indies in any way.
Could you explain what you mean when you say you can see his viewpoint? What do you mean by that?
Meaning that he philosophically, if he's on a ban, and that's imposed by the ICC for international cricket and for Australian cricket, then I can see that you know, if he wants to, you know, to hold hands with that group, then we could enforce a ban. But they have made it clear from the framework of the ban that he's able to do this. You know, if you look at it from the point of view of the franchise, I mean, the franchise really needed a quality player, an established player, and you know, having him and some of the others has made a difference already. You saw what he did with Hope, and I think that would have been great assistance to Hope during that 88 to 41 that he played. Mm-hmm. And you know, with Guptill not, you know, Guptill can be hot and cold. I think our franchise needed solid international player, and they don't come any better than Steve.
Indeed. Yeah, what's the second point, caller?
Well put, well put, well put. I love the way you said it. I love the way you phrase it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let me end off on this, on that particular one. I'm saying, remember, we are the Caribbean.
Right.
Right? And if you all don't really see it of what have happened and gone in the past, we remain the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So as you said, holding hands is right. And if we were the only, as I said, other international teams, they not touch him with a 20-foot pole.
Mm.
There's no way there they didn't do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are the only persons who didn't do it. Anyway, next one is this.
Yes.
The young regional cricketers that we have in training mm-hmm. and that are doing very well, as even you, Mr. Mason,
mm-hmm.
many times, despite you're very critical of a lot of them, in fairness.
But don't I praise them too, caller?
Yes, that's what I said, in fairness.
Good.
In fairness, right? I believe in mine that they should have given one of them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. We are not going to be saying to ourselves, we can win at any cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the way the sport was supposed to be going. So many the business now. You still have to look at, even if you want to see the moral aspect of it, mm-hmm. you know, sending a message to youngsters
mm-hmm.
and other persons that are coming up. Anyway, that note, I know we're not going any further because
mm-hmm.
I don't think I will go to the other one because it's not a controversial type of thing. And
mm-hmm.
and I believe in my selectors must be mindful of this
mm-hmm.
and sending a message to a lot of youngsters that are saying I can do this and get away with it later on.
Mm-hmm.
So when you all, now listen to me, remember today's date, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you do not see my friend in there, the repercussions is yet, right?
Right.
But remember today's date.
Mm-hmm.
When it come in, you all will know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, have a great night.
All right. Thank you very much indeed. Let's take another call. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
You're welcome.
Yes, Andrew. The caller there who was the caller was talking about
Steve Smith. Mm-hmm.
It is not an international ban that Steve Smith is under.
Okay.
Steve Smith has been suspended by Cricket Australia for a year.
Right.
So the reservations that the caller has had,
mm-hmm.
or the caller has, I should say, mm-hmm. about Steve Smith does not come into play in mm-hmm. this regard,
mm-hmm.
and it's not necessarily correct to say that others have not touched on the 10-foot pole. I think what happened is that when the thing occurred, it was still fresh in the mind, and
mm-hmm.
the only other tournament that would have come up at the time when he was available would have been the IPL, and then CPL is now the next one that is on the calendar, and then mm-hmm. we'll probably see what happens when the T20 Blast takes off in Britain later on, probably this month or so. But it is not an international ban. It is a ban. I think the ICC only suspended him for one game, if my memory serves me correctly, and I think. That was also up for challenge at one stage. People were saying, how can you, you know, why would you only impose a one match ban?
Mm-hmm.
But the Australians felt very strongly that the traditions of cricket in Australia had been impinged upon, and that is why the truth of the whole matter is that he can't play senior level cricket in Australia, but he's played club cricket in Australia, which is the fascinating thing. So the caller is even strengthening the point.
Mm-hmm.
The caller is really way off base in that regard, in that he can't play properly, you know, Sheffield Shield, can't play in the 50-over senior tournaments for a year, or play for Australia for a year, but he was allowed to play club cricket in Australia. All three of them, him, Cameron Bancroft, and David Warner, they all played cricket at the club level in Australia since the ban was imposed. And he also made a point about giving youngsters an opportunity. That is always a very ticklish issue, Andrew, because let's understand that the CPL is a professional tournament. It's a money-making tournament, and while there may be some aspects of you want to develop players, at the same time, you know, you must recognize that this is an international tournament. It's a professional tournament. It's a money making tournament. And in that regard, you may very well find that the franchises will. That's why, for example, as you discussed with Wayne earlier, the whole question of what's taking place in Jamaica as they're only hosting two games, whereas Florida will host three, and it's because of it's driven by commercial obligations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you have so the franchise where there's always a player like a Steve Smith available, a David Warner, and other players available, will want to grab those players. But what you must understand is that when you have those players in the tournament,
mm-hmm.
apart from just the fact that you have a quality cricketer, as I said, it is a commercially driven tournament.
Right.
So what happens is you cannot go to, let's say, Channel 9 in Australia or Fox Sport in Australia and sell the rights to those mm. to those channels.
That's because of those players.
Yeah, because of those players.
Mm, yeah, right? Warner Smith in particular, yes.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is correct. So mm-hmm. all of these are while you want to see, you would love for some of our young players to be given an opportunity to play. The truth be told is, it is a commercially driven tournament, and that is the reality of the situation,
mm-hmm.
and that a lot of people don't appreciate. I mean, you know, I know that over the last couple of seasons there's been this argument about the composition of the Barbados Tridents team, but rightly so. I think your program is trying to educate people that it is a franchise tournament.
It is, yeah.
And in that regard,
mm-hmm.
yes, you will pick players who you reckon are
mm-hmm.
you know will bring something to the table. And in that regard, when you do lose or when your team doesn't do well, then the coaches, the players, they find themselves, you know, out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
mm-hmm.
it happens in all franchise sports around the world. So
mm-hmm.
it is nothing. It is just a new concept to the Caribbean. But I just thought I would just share those two opinions so that the caller wouldn't get too distressed about the whole aspect of Steve Smith and of course the opportunity for young players to play.
Well, thank you very much indeed. A voice that we know very well. Continue to listen. Let's take another call. Hello, welcome.
Yes, good evening, Andrew.
Good evening.
Yes, after listening to the case put forward there by Mr. Willie Witcher, is fantastically put.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask, good night, Mr. Ford.
Good night, sir.
And Jamal Smith is in the studio.
Hi, Jamal. Oh, how could I forget the
Empire Man,
the champion, the king of the home of champions.
Hi, good night.
Good night. I'll get back to that shortly. Now, I also wanted to weigh in on that, but since that Mr. Richards, we're not friends in that form that I could call him by his nickname.
Mm-hmm.
I think he put it, the first caller really was fairly out of his depth, and he was going to ask Mr. Ford to rewrite his prescription because the gentlemen, the guys that are down here, were the ICC is, according to the rules at the then time, they had to miss a match, but it was the president or prime minister of Australia, then their rule that those guys had to be punished for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that has nothing to do with those fellas coming out and playing 2020 cricket in any way. And then those fellas come out and play 2020 now, it brings a better crowd.
Mm-hmm.
My thing is that there's no, I'm sure the best of these cricket, and Sarge Gordon now is putting on the 2020 tournament,
right?
And the best of the cricket. And our players within the Caribbean need to shine so that the franchise would be able to see fellas who are shining when those tournaments put on, and some of them can get a look in. But because you are playing in Barbados and you're the Barbados Pride, automatically you know that everybody's going to get a Barbados and get a player. So let me compliment the guy for doing quite well.
I thought Randolph that victory against the Amazon Warriors was a good one. I mean, yep. you don't beat the Warriors very easily in Guyana,
but it was
a tremendous performance. I mean, let's look at the Battle of Hope.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't said anything about him, and I know you want to comment on him as well, Randolph.
Yeah.
But I mean, Hope was absolutely brilliant. And only recently we were complaining about Hope strike rate in 50 over. Remember?
But
recently. Yeah, but the batting, in fact, he was a linchpin there, the batting.
Then I listened to, I think it is Tony Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Gray was saying that Hope needs to play more 2020 cricket.
Right.
Because he's at ease.
Right.
Right? He seemed to be get bogged down when he had to play the 50-50. And I mean, he played like a... He was playing bowlers that really he was but he was playing good bowling and playing it really well.
Batted very well. In fact, he was able to give the Tridents a good score.
And I think too that also at the other end, I think he could have been more motivated and inspired
mm-hmm.
by having a number two player of the world,
Steve Smith.
In fact, he's
gone back to number one now. Brand, I just want your thoughts a minute. Let's get Jamal in on this, the batting of Hope.
Well, it's a very interesting point. I personally believe that Shea could do a lot better. Shea Hope could do a lot better in the 50-over format. And people have been complaining about his strike rate or whatnot. It's very interesting for me that the point was made about Shea playing more T20 cricket simply because that I have accomplished that argument as far as Kemar Roach and Shannon Gabriel are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I don't believe that they should be playing this format of the game simply because there mm-hmm. are two most, how to put it, or two strike fast bowlers at the moment in
right.
cricket, and they're prone to, as we put it, break down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that playing T20 cricket that I would move them away from that green. But having said that, this is the perfect platform for say Shea Hope to get his strike rate up, to play with a bit of care, a bit more carefree.
Mm-hmm.
And as the caller already said, with the introduction of a guy like Steve Smith,
mm-hmm.
who I'm sure would have the dressing room, you know, a buzz with information and that kind of stuff, and guys can feed off of him and how he goes about his business.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the franchise cricket is all about. And I think that Barbadians and by extension Caribbean, they need to understand that they have to embrace the CPL. From the point of view of not, how to put it, practicing their own or expressing their own form of nationalism, so
right,
to speak.
Right.
You know, this is not what it's about. As Woody Richards rightly said, it's a commercial enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
These are commercial dealing opportunities, not only for the players, but for the Caribbean as a whole.
Right.
Right down to the snow cone man.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, no, I'm just being beyond the spin-offs and the benefit. It's almost like we've been thrown a caveat, if so to speak, and we don't know how to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the CPL, I know it was running deficit now for the last couple of years. We're at the IPL,
right.
Which, you know, the figures that come back from the IPL could probably run the Barbadian economy for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
we have to look, you know, we take the conversation further. So when a caller is going to call and say that Steve Smith should not be a part and parcel of a CPL.
That was a joker.
I mean, well, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The question, I mean, it's plain that was advocate. The question could be if they were not on ban, if they would be so inclined to join us here in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that we have opportunities to market our product. But we have to market our product.
Mm-hmm.
We have to seize those opportunities and embrace them.
Yeah.
And this is not about necessarily Barbadian as in Barbados Tridents. This is about a franchise that operates in Barbados, that has international players, has some Barbadians as well, and players from all over the Caribbean.
Mm.
And they represent us. They represent this nation. It's up to us if we choose to support them or not. By any day, it's the franchise. And people need to understand the difference between franchise cricket and playing for West Indies.
Andrew, Randolph.
Right. I must say, too, we also have to understand that, then it'll get to Jamal. We must understand that the guy, Reefer,
right.
He played a lot. He knows that wicket down there quite well.
Yes.
And he knows how to bowl on that wicket, as Jamal was saying. Jamal, on Saturday, if my memory served me well, Keith Holder was going through his stacks. And you had some very good returns as a younger youngster in spinning.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if this season, seeing that you are not using the gloves, if you're going to impart some spin for the home of champions and assist Warrington.
Yes.
The captain has actually been throwing that at me. I've been pulling a bit of off-break in the net.
In the net.
So, it's not far away.
Well, at least within the next two games, then Jamal should be taking up a name.
Okay.
No, Randolph, and I'm going to throw this out to you now. I mean, it's very early days, of course, in the CPL. Interesting enough, the Trinidad and Knight Riders, it's difficult to beat them at home. Mm-hmm. But in three matches, they've lost two. So this is significant. And it, I mean, look at the show put down by Russell. So you've got a situation where the Tridents, they went to Ghana last time. They didn't win. They were up and down. But then what about the Stars? I mean, Jamal, they've performed very poorly. They've now what? It's what, 13 matches without a win?
Okay. I feel the Stars is going to win tonight.
You feel they'll win tonight? Why do you think so?
I think Warner is going to come off tonight.
Oh.
I think Warner is going to bring it apart tonight.
He's too good a player. Too good a player.
Yeah, he hasn't come off yet, so most likely this might be his night to light up Sabine apart. I think Trinidad, I think playing games back-to-back
right.
might be a lot for some teams. It isn't easy to play
That's an interesting point. And maybe someone who plays the game a lot, Jamal, because we note with interest that, for instance, the Talibos will play against the Stars tonight, and then tomorrow night they're going to be playing against the Patriots. Did you like the idea of back-to-back like that, Jamal?
Well, okay, let me address the two losses by the Knight Riders. I will put down the loss to the Jamaica Talibos as just individual brilliance. That's one of those games where when a guy turns up and it's his night, especially a guy like Russell with his ability and his awesome striking power and the hat trick, but it was just his night.
Right.
And, you know, the Knight Riders to me is still a pretty good unit. And honestly, looking at these squads, I personally believe the Knight Riders have the best unit.
You think they've got the best unit?
Man for man in the competition.
I agree with that.
As far as the Stars are concerned, I see where they run themselves in trouble. They have a lot of problems. I know Andre Fletcher is known all over the Caribbean in 2020. But it's something I pick up about his batting in terms of not being able to rotate the strike. And if he's not hitting boundaries, now let's face it, T20 cricket has evolved to the point where people do their homework. And they just don't run out and bowl the ball in areas where guys like Fletcher, for instance, would like to get the ball.
Mm.
And we have Fletcher, Simmons, obviously Warner is world-class material. Mm. But we have Cornwall as well.
Andrew, I want to ask you a question about the boundary line before I go.
You're sure? No, no.
Yeah, but we're seeing a lot of guys in St. Lucia Stars line up that just strike the ball.
Right.
And especially playing cricket, especially in Guyana, especially on the bigger ground and stuff. And again, you know, with the people doing the homework, if you can't counter a guy basically stopping you from scoring boundaries and you're not scoring, you will run into trouble. I think the Stars need to start putting together better batting partnerships as far as rotating strike is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Randolph.
Is it true that for 2020 cricket, and I'm going to put it at this level of CPL, right? And you're playing, let's say, even Kensington or Sabine Park, that the boundary line comes in closer than if you were playing a test match or a four-day game?
I haven't seen that.
Do the rope?
No, not as far as I know. Have you seen that at Kensington Oval? Not before, or Jamal?
For 2020 game. So I
haven't seen that.
Well, they do need a little room, you know, for occasions where they may try to do the boundary, a special catch at the boundary, but it shouldn't be significantly different.
Hopefully. So I want to know the distance between the wicket and the boundary for a test match would not be the same thing.
I haven't seen it. I mean, it's something that I can check up for you, Randolph, but I haven't seen it. My question to you, though, who do you think is going to win this?
The moment.
Mm.
Let's wait until right now the Trinbago people have played three games, eh?
Right.
Let's wait till each team has played. Shouldn't even say that because Ghana has played three.
Right.
So eventually the others have played three. And then we will have a good gauge.
Right? So at the moment you're not picking a winner. It's too early.
No, you can't pick a winner yet. I think this one is going to be a lot tighter than before. It's going to be a lot tighter.
Yeah, it seems more competitive.
I mean look at Trinidad at home losing. I mean that doesn't happen a lot. I mean, so I certainly agree with you that it looks a little tight. You agree with that, Jamal? It's going to be tighter this year?
Yeah, much better international presence, I would say. Much
more. The team seem to be a lot more evenly balanced with certain players.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that Karis Baffert came good
So we like we are aimed for a better treat this year. I hope that Dwayne Smith, as I signed off, would try and temper himself in his early part of his innings.
Right.
Try and get the ball going more groundward than trying to hit it.
I like that.
For that in his career.
Early part of the inning.
Yes, I like that.
If all the fielders are in,
right,
I can understand you going over. But not see yourself but deep, long on and long on. And you're trying to clear them. No, don't make things in the early. Gentlemen.
All right. Thanks very much indeed, Randolph, our favorite caller. Let's go now to Trinidad and Tobago. I almost said let's go to Haynesville in St. James, but of course, Philo Wallace no longer lives in Barbados. He lives in Trinidad and he jogs at the Queen's Park Savannah every morning. Hello, Philo. Nice to hear you. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening to you.
As well.
Right. Now, tell me, what's this up with the Trinidad Knight Riders? I mean, you don't normally go to Queen's Park Oval and beat them. They've played in three matches, but they've lost two. Could you explain this, Philo?
Well, Andrew, they were shocked by a guy called Andre Russell.
Yes.
On Wednesday, they had a fantastic game against the St. Lucia Stars. Obviously, not a strong franchise, not a new leadership of Kieran Pollard. And they played wonderfully well to have won that game by 100 runs, which is convincing. But then they brought up on the Jamaican Talibans. They got a very big total of 223. But Andre Russell made a difference. He had a hat trick. He finished the game with a hat trick. And then he came to bat at number 7. The Talibans were between number 2. And he just decided he's going to take the bull by the horn and back his strength and his batting ability. And he struck the ball to all parts of the Queen's Park Oval often and with a lot of authority. He hit two of the biggest sixes Andrew ever saw at the Oval. He hit two sixes over the Royal Bank stand. This is the tallest stand at the Queen's Park Oval. And he took those two sixes off of Sunil Narine.
Right. Mm.
It's the first time I saw Sunil Narine bowling and like didn't want to touch the cricket ball. He was hitting it that hard. And it was amazing how hard he struck the cricket ball and he surprised all of them.
What a performance.
It was a fantastic performance.
And of course, before he would have taken a hat trick, so he had a brilliant game.
He had a magnificent game. When you look at it, he's a new leader and he had to lead from the front. And that hat trick set up his momentum to come to bat. He said that obviously he and Lenar Lewis, they trained together in Jamaica. So they know each other well.
Right.
And Lewis was positioned at that number because he knew that once he gets in there with Lewis, that they would build a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the beauty about practicing with experienced guys. They have the confidence in the junior guy to do it. And then the junior guy obviously executes. And everything is hunky-dory. But when you look at that game, the picture Andrew was a fantastic pick.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was one of the better T20 pitches. Again, hard, full bounce, and you can hit through the line of the ball. Because there was no turn. So then the right hardly got the ball turned. But the bounce was consistent and the pace. So he just hit through the ball. And then you look at it, he just played wonderfully well. And you have to commend him because he's captain the Jamaican Talawai. There's not a lot of so-called stars.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Now, in terms of the first match that they played, the Knight Riders, they beat the St. Lucia Stars. And that was a pretty decent victory for them.
Yes, they look good on Wednesday against the Lucia Stars. Again, the Stars not really a potent side. Pollard obviously feeling his feet with the start side. And I thought that the Stars were a little bit, lackadaisical. You could see that the Knight Riders had really put in the preseason work and they look good. Colin Monroe came out and struck the ball to all parts of the boundary. And then Ramdin came in later in the innings and got a 50 knockout in quick time. And he struck some magnificent sixes. And the sixes that these guys struck, Andrew, they were all well-balanced and good cricket shots.
Mm-hmm.
But the power of it, they're hitting the ball with, is unbelievable. You're hearing people live in the stand, and people can't believe how hard the cricket ball is here. And Ramdin and Monroe batted wonderfully well against the Stars, and obviously the Stars, they just disintegrate. I thought that Pollard batted too low yet again.
You thought he's batting too low, huh?
Yeah, he's batting too low. You have to command your cricket at number 4. Then obviously Cornwall was not in Cornwall that we saw a couple of years ago. And obviously those things went against the Stars. And David Warner, for example, I would be very, very disappointed in him. He looked a shadow of himself. The only scoring shot that David Warner had in that game against the Knight Riders was sucking the ball into the left side.
No. And so they lost two matches. They won one. What are the concerns, Phil, you've got about the Trinbago Knight Riders, if any at all?
My concern is how they're using the very curve.
Okay.
Now, he didn't play the third game against the
He played one game, yes.
For Kevin Cooper. And my thing is that you can't pick the ball down the very curve, the ball one over, and back two or three overs. I think he's a better cricketer than that. I think if you're going to pick Devon Scanderbury, he has to bowl at least two or three overs. He can help support Dwayne Brown for the bowling.
Mm-hmm.
But Dwayne Brown for bowling, obviously, has been warned in the last
year.
Over 50. Mm-hmm. Over 50, which is a lot of licks that he's trying to pick it.
Yes, he's getting lots of lashes.
Yeah, the batting is all right. When you look at it, the batting down the line, all the way down to Devon Scanderbury is good batting. I think the batting lineup is a good batting lineup because you have Brendan McCallum coming in that middle order to stabilize the middle order. And I think that is very, very good. You've got Dan Bravo, you've got the powerhouses in Dwayne Bravo, and you've got Rambe and those guys. The batting is good. I think their bowling is really not very well. And Dwayne Bravo continues to want to be that go-to man for the death overs, and his death bowling is poor.
Yep, it is.
He's been worked out. The young cricketers of the day, Andrew, they no longer fear no Dwayne Bravo.
No.
They've worked him out, and they're putting lashes on him early. And Narayan, again, is not as potent as he used to be. Because we saw that once you start tapping Narayan, he goes into a shell. So their bowling needs a bit more skill in order to topple some of these T20 batsmen that they're going to come up against.
No. Before you go, Philo, I mean, it's pretty early to talk about a winner. But we've seen some impressive performances. You know, of course, Barbados Tridents looked very good against Amazon Warriors. The Trinbago Knight Riders, you know, they lost two matches, which is unusual. And we saw the Talibos with a big victory against the Trinbago Knight Riders. But of great concern would be the St. Lucia Stars. Now 30 matches without a win.
Yes, it's very hard on them. I spoke to Roddy Estes, who is obviously their bowling coach for this hero CPS that he is. And obviously, he has to dig deep into his take time to get these guys. Because he's a bowling coach, it doesn't mean he only has to deal with the bowlers. He has to get that entire unit thinking how to win. It's a big responsibility on Pollard. They gave Sammy played his Darren Sammy, played a former Japanese player in the first game, and then they dropped him.
Right.
I believe he deserved the talk because again,
Sammy was dropped.
Sammy
was dropped.
But if he's not the last and Sammy needs to understand that, no disrespect to him, Andrew, but he lost all 10 games last year, and he was part of that. He was captain, and then he lost the captaincy.
Right.
He gave the captain to Watson from Australia. He's no longer here. And he was still there as a former captain. He would have experienced all that the team went through last year. And you come in 2018, and you drop a catch the first over, and you're smiling. You don't even chase after the ball. You can't start 2018 like that. They had a horrible 2017, and you were part of it.
In fact, Phil, if I can interrupt, you know, the St. Lucia Stars, they've won the toss, they've elected to bat, they're now 12 for 1.
Warner's out.
That's a big wicket, Phil.
Yeah, he's struggling, Andrew. He's a shadow of himself. And we need sometimes to ask ourselves: Is it right to bring a man who's been under such a big cloud with ball tampering into all?
Right.
What is he bringing to the St. Lucia Stars? Psychologically, he is still feeling the effects of that ban of ball tampering issue. He's meant by be a little bit more relaxed because he has a cushion. Obviously he's a former captain. A lot of people like him. Warner was not really a like man in international cricket. That kind of feeling.
No.
So more pressure will be on him. And he's bringing, to me, Andrew, I saw him at a Queen's Park. I never saw David Warner drop a cricket ball in my life. Never saw him drop a catch. Drop a catch, midfield. You don't throw him the ball powerfully. He's not that robust looking fella anymore. He's lost a lot of weight. And it's
He has lost a lot of weight. He doesn't look the cricketer that we know.
He looks a shadow of himself.
Yes, he does. Phil, before you go, two things. The crowd's big, as usual at the Queen's Park Oval. What's your assessment of the pitches?
Oh, the pitches are wonderful, Andrew.
Good.
Giacomo knows what he's doing. Not only in 4 days, 3 days, 5 days, 1 day, 2 days. He knows what he's doing, Andrew. And I hope that Cricket West Indies look upon this man to take him around the region to get our pitches right. He's a fantastic curator. He understands surfaces. The crowds in Trinidad and Tobago, the Queen's Park Oval, sold out. Sea of Red. Wayne Bravo continues to say the 12th man, which is that massive crowd. They left disappointed on Friday and Saturday. But when the Trinbago Night Riders return, they still have that kind of support. And hopefully, as Bravo said, they have a good record on the road and they can find themselves in a position where they'll make the playoffs.
Mm. All right, Philo, thanks very much for coming through and talking to us. Of course, we're going to pause for business call. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jamal Smith. And maybe let's do an assessment now of the teams. You can call us at 4341-790. Of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados to start with promoting youth sport and culture.
Well, then we're going to sing a song.
Man, it's so good to hear from you, Gabby. You have not been to Mason and Guest in a long time. In fact, I'm going to say this. I'm going to have an either of the clips on it. You know, we had it before when yourself would have been in the studios along with Bag. Who else would have been in the studios? John King was in the studios. And what was interesting is he wanted the plantation, then though he's got a ministry. And who else would have been in the studios? Oh, we had a wonderful time. So I can tell you, the mighty Gabby, we're going to be inviting you again. And you know what?
I want my other ambassador,
yes. Oh, yes. RPB.
I want to move it up, my buddy.
No, you can't. Of course, nowadays he's singing hallelujah.
That's right. We were at a church this week here, just 2 nights ago.
Right, okay.
And the reception was fantastic when they played that song.
Wonderful.
Brilliant. You know, also church. But I called because, you know, Ben Stokes won his case today.
Yes.
So, my thing is, you know, we were still talking about how you go ban, how you got this, but England automatically put him back into their team.
Right.
So, my question is, what is the England Cricket Board going, England and Wales Cricket Board going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because they now have to make their own decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be interesting to find out what decision they're going to make. Now,
mm-hmm.
Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Was that he saw these two men, two gay men, somebody was taking advantage of, and he stepped in to help them.
Mm-hmm.
That was on one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin is that one of the guys claimed that he was aggressive towards them, but how it turned out is that the court decided that Ben was not guilty. But we also got to go back a little bit and remember that Ben was sent home from Australia for indiscipline behavior as well.
Mm-hmm.
But in discipline, I should say. And then there was another case, in 2013 and 2016, he got into problems. So they're hoping, I'm hoping, because I like him as a player, that, you know, he could quell some of the hotheadedness that seemingly has.
Mm-hmm.
And for the sake of cricket, not just for England, to see him play, because he's a good all-rounder.
Very good all-rounder indeed. Yes. Gabby, are you still keen on the cricket? Do you still go to watch on weekends and go to Kensington for test matches?
I don't get much out on weekends these days, but yes, if there's a game at Kensington, at one time in Barbados, I always try to make it.
Mm.
Because in the old days, it was different. I used to travel wherever the old West Indies team was. Mm-hmm. I would try to be there. And I was very lucky in that sometimes at the Oval and Lords and so I would get into the dressing room and the guys and stuff like that. So I was able to see it and hear the comments from inside the dressing room. And, you know, not many people get that lucky. But, you know, nowadays I don't get that opportunity. But I can say that with our team now, I find that
a lot of emphasis is being placed, which is rightfully so in some regard, on the 2020 and the 50 over game.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that we can't abandon the test cricket unless we looking to change through some of the things in test cricket.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt, I had discussed this years ago with Collis King, that you should be X amount of overs per day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have it, but that when those overs are over, then the next team bats.
Oh.
So you better have your score up there after that time, because you should be able to bat all day long. You might do 80 or something like that, and then you come back tomorrow and do the same thing again, and then the game draw. You should give the patrons a chance to see a victory by one of these teams by telling you X amount of overs per day and bring that new ball faster. And this way you get a more exciting game. I don't know what's the real rationale about having to bowl 19 million overs before you get a new ball. I don't know why.
There's a lot of overs to bowl. A lot of overs to bowl. Interesting comments you're making. Well, Gabby, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
A pleasure, Andrew.
Yeah, what I will do, I got your number.
Even though I wouldn't normally call in, but I only call in today because I just want people to know that Ben Stokes, who didn't know yet,
right,
has actually won his case. So he's back in England team automatically.
In fact, Gabby, if you stay on the line, we just have a little clip in relation to this whole business with Ben Stokes. So stay on the line and listen to it.
Firstly, Ben would like to thank his friends, teammates, family, and in particular his wife, Claire, for their unerring support throughout what has been a very difficult period for Ben. Today's verdict represents the end of an 11-month ordeal for Ben, during which time he's had to maintain his silence at times when many on social media and in certain parts of the press predetermined his guilt long before the trial began. Over the last week, the jury have been able to see and hear all of the evidence, and not merely what the media have chosen to report. The evidence available to the jury included a full range of CCTV footage that shows exactly what happened in September. The jury's decision that Ben is not guilty fairly reflects the truth of what happened in Bristol that night. The past 11 months have served to highlight to Ben just how highly he values his position as an England representative, both in terms of the privilege that role entails and the responsibilities that accompany it. Now that the trial is over, Ben is keen to get back to cricket being his sole focus.
Indeed. So there you have it. Very interesting piece there coming from England. Okay, thanks to you, the mighty Gavin. Let's go to St. Lucia and talk to the noted commentator, Joseph Redspur. Hello, Joseph. How are you? Hello, Joseph? Oh. Okay. We'll try and see. Hello, Joseph. Are you with us? Hello, Reds. All right.
Silent treatment.
Yes. I don't know, because we're talking Ben Stokes.
Yeah.
But let's go to Jamal now. And by the way, there's 31 for one. The Stars are batting. Fletcher's on 21. Warner gone for 7. Simmons has now come to the crease. I want you to do an assessment now of the team so far. Let's start with the Trinbago Knight Riders. Look at their side. They've played 3 matches. They've lost 2, which is a bit strange at home. And I note with interest that Bravo's been getting a lot of lashes. What's your assessment of Trinbago Knight Riders? We can start with them.
Yes, I still believe the Trinbago Knight Riders, especially being defending champions, they shouldn't panic. I still believe they will make it to the playoffs. Obviously, a bit of individual brilliance by Andrea Russell would have meant that they now have lost 2 games. But having said that, they moved to St. Lucia. And if my phone is correct, they will have to play against the St. Lucia Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game, again, that they should be looking to win. And if you really look at the makeup, again, of the Trinbago Knight Riders side, They have a bit of experience,
mm-hmm,
and they have a fair bit of power and girl, especially in the spin department. So I wouldn't panic if I was Trinbago Knight Riders. I'll just stick to the game plan and play some cricket.
Mm. So they're not a little bit at all?
Definitely.
No, and you said they got the best side in terms
on
of
paper,
balance.
For me, man, I think they're the best balance side.
Okay. Well, let's hold your horses. Red Spur is on the line from St. Lucia. Hello, Reds. How are you?
Watching the Towers and the Stars, and the Stars are batting first at the 36-1 with Warner. Unfortunately, batting well, really striking the ball nicely off Thomas, bowling with a fair amount of spaces. Santuku is getting a lot of swing, and Warner played the ball into the pad and ran onto the stumps. So a little bit of lady luck that he needs just isn't there.
Now, what's gone wrong with the Stars, though? Reds, I mean, they've now played, what, 13 matches without a win. That must concern you?
Well, that's concerning me. It must be concerning the franchise owners and the solution cricket in public, who takes some pride, like everyone else in the franchise, that takes some pride with their side. It's a better side, Andrew, and you're agreeing with your panel, better side than they put together before. There were Zooks played last year, they changed the captain, they have never changed the captain as one to pull it. But I don't believe, Andrew, they have played the best 11. I mean, tonight they have finally brought in McCoy, who probably should have come in as a wicket-taking left arm, generally fast, 6'7". They have left him out. They went for Mohammed Sami for the first two games. They did bring in Hodge in the second game. But tonight, there's still like Chapman, who really, if anyone who's been watching, hasn't really offered much. So I don't believe that they have really, to answer your question, what's gone wrong. I don't believe that they are one of the strongest combinations, although they're better than last year. But I don't believe they have picked the right 11.
Oh, I see. Now, what's the interest like, though? Because very soon, the St. Lucians will be having cricket there. Lots of tickets being sold, interest as high, Reds?
Well, I think they already shot themselves in the foot against Guyana, 113-2. One would have thought that Pollard and Simmons would have taken it home. One of them had to stay. I mean, this was very straightforward. It wasn't rocket science, that one of them had to stay. Both got out. Then Paul produced quite a good yorker to get rid of Hart, and panic simply set in. But I have to suggest that the blame should go to Pollard and Simmons for not being there to finish what was a fairly average score of 140.
Yes, they really should have won that game. There's no doubt about that. Red, do you expect big crowds in St. Lucia for those matches?
Well, Andrew, the world of the winners. Had they won in Guyana, I thought definitely that would give them a spike. I have to try and find out tomorrow how the ticket sales are going, if someone is willing to tell me.
Right.
And I'm sure maybe Williger might be calling me a sports match. I need to know.
Right.
But they need at least to compete tonight against the Jamaica Dollars, who, of course, thanks to Andy Russell, is coming off magnificent, come from behind the victory against D&D. That really had the Trinidad and Tobago crowd silent. Russell and Lewis really turned things around. Lewis was getting better, but they really silenced the Trinidad crowd. They had hoped the night at Sabina Park. And so far, I'm getting some evidence that some sensible cricket is being played by Fletcher and by Simmons. They are pushed on to almost 50 for one. But you need to play sensible cricket in this tournament. You can't be throwing your hand away after getting 30 or 40. I mean, you've got to take your responsibilities. I think basically all franchise need an X factor, a couple of players, and an X factor, a couple of bowlers. And that's the only way people are going to do well, is if you have three or four players in the bowling or batting department putting their hands up, a good performance just might help, Andrew, to spike the interest for church tonight.
All right.
It's not an easy time to attend the CPL because really and truly, the average person is going to get home at midnight.
Mm. Right. Well, that's true. All right, Reds, well, thanks for coming through and talking to us. And we're going to allow our good friend Jamal to do a comprehensive assessment of all the teams. Jamal, take it for the next couple of minutes.
Yes, well, the Guyana Amazon Warriors, they have, especially at home, they have had a good record and they have a good history of playing in the CPL as well. And one would expect that the Guyana Warriors, along with the Trinbago Knight Riders, will be favorites, although the Trinbago Knight Riders have struggled at home, would be favorites for that qualifying position. Having said that, as I said, the St. Lucia Stars, they need to pick up some ground tonight, Andrew, and it's very important that they hit the ground running with a win. But to be fair, it's a very difficult task at the moment. And the challenge is tonight for them to put together a game that would constitute something of confidence, because coming from 13 love, you know, I don't know what kind of game plan, what kind of match plan you can have after being beaten 13 times in a row. That in itself is a big barrier to overcome. They will definitely have to come very, very good tonight. But they do look a much better side in terms of the construction. But as far as the performance is concerned, and with the new captaincy as well, with a Pollard who tends to be, he's more forceful than, say, a Darren Sammy, who obviously was sat. For the St. Lucia team to gel, especially in this tournament, which is pretty short, it's only two rounds, it's going to be a bit difficult for them to overcome such. We have the Tridents, a new look Tridents in a sense, but what I love most about the Tridents as Red Spirit would have noted, he spoke about the X Factor players. What I love the most about the Tridents is they have power actually top, middle, and bottom in the batting, and that's very important. They actually are a very balanced side with the likes of Guptill, who people say like to say is hot and cold, but at the end of the day, he's very destructive. Then we have Hashim Amla, who needs no introduction. And Dwayne Smith again, he gets going. You still have Nicholas Buran, who had a very good run the other night in the middle. You know, he was very destructive and he looked a bit of his old self, and his keeping was relatively good. I know if you're going to be critical of him, one would say that his keeping was not there or thereabout in the seasons before, but he looked pretty good the other night. And then with the likes, obviously, of Shea Hope, it's very, very warming to the heart to see Shea going as well as he had so far in the first game. Still have guys like Ross and Chase on the bench, Tion Webster, and McCann wasn't used much. You have Shamar Springer as well, who can give it a good whack. Dominic Dreyas, a young, exciting talent. So all in all, this Trident side is a side that can also go all the way as well.
No real mystery spinner here, though. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. But remember, the Amazon game, for instance, Jason utilized his resources as well. He went to, say, a Raymond Reefer, and he used Ashley Nurse, Lenny Sheldon. And McCann, you know, he's a bit of a roller, but he can get a job done. I think this bowling attack, as you said, it won't cause any major alarms, but it's a solid bowling attack. It's a bowling attack that can keep the opposition down to a total that they can manage.
The only thing they really missed is, you know, one good part of the recipe for a successful T20 team is that guy that can consistently bowl and have a runs for over under six or you know, get some wickets. So, but I guess as a team, if it's a team effort, then the bowling is quite decent.
Yeah, as a collective unit, and let's not forget Jason Holder, his captaincy, his leadership right now, he's pretty astute at the moment.
He
knows his stuff. And Wahab Riaz, though, you know, it'd be interesting to see how he uses him throughout the tournament, because he's the pace, he's the X-factor in the pace, and I noticed the other night he was actually getting more to reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be interesting, especially in conditions that probably would be a bit drier in the next time, let's say, at Barbados or Kensington. Really bounce on the pace in the pitch is as expected. He may cause a bit of a stir along with Irfan.
Irfan is
6 foot
really
9,000. You know, that bounce.
He's a big unit for sure.
Yes, he's a very big unit, and he may be able to create some awkward bounce as well. So the bowling attack for the Tridents, they look pretty good. You have a call on there?
Hello?
Hi, good night. Good night,
Carl. Yeah, I'd like to get out of the program.
You're on the program, so.
About the program?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hello?
Yes, just yes, tell
good
us
evening,
what,
good
you,
evening.
What you'd like to say.
All right, thanks.
Sir, you can you're free,
yeah,
to,
I got a lower,
free to tell us what you have called the thing.
It sounds like Doctor.
Yes,
Doctor Ford.
Is you right?
Yes, sir.
Doctor Lord, it is.
Doctor Ford, go ahead, sir. Let's,
Dr.
let's
Ford.
Talk about the cricket.
Yeah, good night.
Sir, speak. You're on the air already.
Good night.
Yeah, good night. Good night.
You are on the program. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Go ahead, please. You are on the program.
Yeah, good night.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just calling to say that I agree with Jamal's comments. The Tridents and the Stars, the Tobago Stars have the best balance team. And unless the other teams have that flash of brilliance like Russell, I think they're the two teams that will meet in the finals.
Interesting.
Well, they're well balanced both in the batting and bowling attack. For instance, the Tridents got the 7-footer. Jason Holder, and you know, but then the Stars got people that bowling over 90 miles an hour. So
it sounds like Guyana's another good team in the group as well.
Yes, they are.
I tell you, unless the other team got that flash of brilliance like Russell, they the other night, I don't think they're gonna trouble those two teams.
All right, well, thanks for giving us your input, sir. We'll just continue with looking at the squad.
Yeah.
Hello, good evening. Hello, I'm just really.
Good evening.
Are you on already?
Yes, you're on already.
Yeah, good evening. I would like to know if the courts to tell Jason Holder, Captain Holder, bowl. This man cannot help bowling short balls at all. You mean that he ain't got no common sense? If he bowling in the test cricket, short. 50 over short. 20 short.
Well, you know, I think every bowler has their method. He obviously thinks using his height that if you can get the ball, you know, between the waist and the shoulders, it will be difficult to play. He isn't of extreme pace, so you know, he has to mix it up and bowl his Yorkers and bowl his good length balls to get his LBWs and bowl, but get people bowl. But it's he has had a pretty good record, you know, his record has been improving. He's been doing a lot better. He didn't have a too bad a game the first time out. So I believe the coach would talk strategy, and you know, I'm sure that this is his role is understood in all the formats.
What I'm saying is, sir, is that he consistently bowled too much short ball and it goes to the boundary.
Caller, to simplify the point, I get where you're coming from. He bowls, I would say, as shortest of a good length, but he's not express quick. And when you're bowling at these international batsmen, if you're going to go up, you have to be going up with two things. You're either going up with full pace, like, say, a Shannon Gabriel, or you're going up with each-way movement or lateral movement, like, say, a James Anderson. Now, that's for one particular format, say, a test cricket. In this franchise cricket or the T20, it's very important that he has his variations and he mixes his pace and his length. So if you're saying it's a case where he predominantly bowls short in T20 cricket and he constantly goes to the boundary, that would obviously be a cause for some concern. And I could see where that point would be useful. But his returns so far, I would say, for the year have been pretty good. So I would err on the side to say that I understand the point, but I don't necessarily agree that he just bowls short. I think he uses variation, that his strength actually in this cricket would be to use the pitch. You understand what I'm saying? Simply because he's not too quick. Yeah, he has to use the pitch. There's no doubt about it. But you may be correct in saying sometimes his length could improve, that he could actually bowl a bit fuller. If you're saying that he could utilize his Yorker, for instance, if you're saying he could utilize his Yorker, I could agree with that.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks a
lot. All right, so I think you were going for the Thinkets, Nevis Patriots.
Yes, the Patriots, like the silent team of the tournament, I call them. It must be noted. They have some world beaters in here. You have Chris Gayle, obviously, who needs no introduction. Carlos Buffett, who we all know what he has done and what he's renowned for. He's in pretty good form as well. He's a pretty good striker of the ball in the lower middle order. Sheldon Cotterell, in the pace department. I noticed the other night that he really was trying to get the ball up there and swing the ball back into the pads of the back. It wasn't swinging. Chadwick obviously put him on a bit of pump, but I believe that he's the sort of bowler that, you know, he can actually get a wicket or two at the top and create that space for the Patriots to create inroads into a batting lineup. This Patriots team is actually a pretty good team on paper. I see the likes of Fabian Allen here, Jeremiah Louise, an improving medium-fast bowler. Again, Azari Joseph, to my point about Shannon Gabriel and Kemar Roach, I think we're burdening this young guy with too many different forms of cricket, just coming back off injury and asking him to go straight into T20. And obviously we saw what
that
happened.
Confidence building, having guys hit you all over the place, isn't it?
Yes, and you know, these are things I can't understand. Our fast bowling cupboard per se, our 90 mile or 80 to 90 mile per hour cupboard is kind of bare at the moment. And I don't think we should be using these guys who are injury prone in this format of the game, especially in a tournament like this where there's a lot of dual wrong at night and stuff. Like, I could easily twin something going for the extra effort.
Yeah.
Devon Thomas, I noticed he got his first 50 since the inception of the CPL the other night. He would obviously need to perform as well. I noticed his keeping is not as good as it used to be, and that actually can be a bit of a problem because I'm a stickler for a good keeper at this, level. Yes, no, but the standard must be up. So let me look at the St. Kitts Patriots team. It is a competitive side.
Sandy Lamichani, is that how you pronounce it?
Lamichani.
He's been a real mystery bowler so far. Let's see, Lamichani bowling two matches, two innings. His runs for over is 4.14.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen much of him.
Yeah,
heard about him.
He's been bowling very well. And he only has 3 wickets, but you know, he's been very economical and he's been well respected.
Yes, and I see here in Walshire, I would love him to get a game or two. He's a lovely player in the field. He can bat a bit, and he's a leg break bowler. I would love to see him get a bit. But this Patriots team can actually do a bit, fair bit. This can be a playoff side as well.
What are your thoughts, Dave? Because what we're going to do now, we're going to go to... we lost the call, so continue.
Yes, as I was saying, this Patriots team, they can get to the playoffs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're going to set the world alight, obviously, would rest heavily on the likes of Chris Gayle. And as I said,
Evan Lewis has really been having a hard struggle.
Yes,
hard
what's going wrong with him, though?
Struggling.
Yeah. What's going wrong with him?
I personally believe that every player has his purple patch.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that he blasts onto the scene, and I believe now is the period where people start to work him out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you go back to the drawing board as a good player. And you work out where people are coming at you, and then you come back stronger. So he's in that in between, I like to call it the transition period for a batsman. You know, he had his honeymoon, and now he's back to earth. And, you know, he just needs to work out a few things because he's a pretty good player, as he's shown already. But it's for him to get that confidence going again. And he has to look at how he's getting out and how teams are approaching him because everyone, obviously, you know, are coming with a game plan against him.
Yeah, I like to look at the orthodox approach that Holt used in that. 88, never lost his shape, never panicked, just pure placement and cricket shots. And, you know, I think it shows that, you know, the classical batsman has a place in T20 cricket as well.
Agreed.
All right. Okay, gentlemen, we'll certainly give an update. We're going to join 104 towards the end of the show to just get an update. I know that it was 66 for 2 when I last checked. 8 overs gone. But let's talk to the CEO of Cricket West, Johnny Grave, who's with us. Good evening to you, Johnny. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Good evening, Andrew.
Good. Okay. Have you been taking in some of the CPL matches?
I haven't been to any live yet, but I've been watching on TV in Antigua, and we'll be attending my first games on Sunday in Fort Lauderdale.
In Fort Lauderdale. Okay. How important is the CPL to Cricket West Indies?
Well, it's hugely important. It's one of our obviously 3 domestic competitions for our professional men's team. So it's hugely important, and I think it's brilliant that we're seeing all the best players in the Caribbean participating in the 2018 competition.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Would you want to see more West Indians involved?
Yeah, look, I think there are a number of obviously West Indians involved. We're working closely with the CPL to ensure that it follows part of our strategy, not just to develop the cricket within the wider region and the Americas. And obviously, it's good to see some of the USA-based players playing well. And each franchise, as you know, have an ICC Americas player with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's also really important that it gets the showcase and gives opportunity to younger players. And, it's something we're very conscious of. And, it was good to see some of those young players play really well in the Canada Global T20 League. And in the main, looking forward to seeing how they now perform, those that have got the opportunity in the CPL too.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you wouldn't have a return to the Caribbean T20. We had that some time ago. I suppose the contract would preclude that, wouldn't it? It's all CPL.
Yeah, CPL is the only T20 regional tournament that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I think it, it's fantastic. We've got some top overseas players that does mm-hmm. does many things in terms of not just increasing the quality, mm-hmm. but also for players training every day mm-hmm. and speaking in mm-hmm. dressing rooms and mm-hmm. training with these experienced international players. They can hopefully learn a lot from them and glean some knowledge and hopefully they're role models to our younger players in terms of the commitment and sacrifices and professionalism you need to have to make it to the top of the world.
Mm. How do you benefit at Cricket West Indies from CPL?
Well, as I said, it's the one tournament we have to look at all the players in the system in the shortest format of the game, the T20. Clearly, we benefit financially, and obviously all of our players do. The salary cap when you add it up is just shy of $3 million. So it has a big impact on our professional players in the system. And as I say, it's a world class T20 tournament.
Mm.
It's great that it can be played here in the Caribbean, and it's a sustainable league, which again I think is a concern when you look at other full member nations that don't necessarily have a domestic T20 competition that is as vibrant and international as ours. Sri Lanka have announced that they're just having a domestic T20 league that's not going to involve any international players. New Zealand's league has very few international players.
Mm-hmm.
And South Africa's is outside of their Ram Slam is yet to get off the ground. So I think we're fortunate to have the CPL. And as I say, it's great that this year we've been able to schedule our international cricket around the tournament so all the best players in the region can play in it. And
mm-hmm.
That's something that we're desperately trying to achieve all the way out between now and the next two World Cups, so all the way out till 2023.
Mm-hmm. And I know when you were here in Barbados a couple of months ago, there's a lot of fanfare, lots of cricket being shown all around the world, but you made the point, and a very interesting one, that the only tournament really, the IPL, they make money. You were saying that the Big Bash in Australia, they don't. And I understand that the CPL, despite the fact that you would think they're making money, they're actually losing money. So although, yes, the cricket is good, lots of crowds, the television rights are being sold, it would appear as if, are you still with us? Nobody's gone?
Yeah, okay. But these business plans are, it takes years for these type of endeavors to really break even and to start to make a profit. But if they can get the CPL to the level that they would like, then the TV revenue will pay for everything. So that's why it's so important to get these overseas players and that sort of thing involved.
Indeed, yes. This is why I asked Johnny the question. How are we benefiting here in the Caribbean?
Yes, and if the ICC gets their way with only three T20 tournaments, then there's the IPL and your home one and one other.
Right. I was just asking Johnny. It's good to have you back. A lot of cricket, a lot of people coming to watch the games. In fact, the CPL is saying that they're selling this cricket to everyone. But the reality is that it's not much of a money making venture apart from the IPL.
Yeah, look, I think most of the T20 leagues are still in their investment phase, and CPL is certainly going through that. Clearly now it's well established in the cricket calendar and has been operating for many years. So I think they're certainly looking to make profit this year. Whether they achieve that or not, I guess they won't know until the end of the tournament. But I think CPL are fairly confident that this year they're moving into profit. And I believe, we've seen the crowds in Trinidad and Ghana and And I think certainly that those franchises are looking to be profitable as well. So, you know, as I say, you know, all the different franchises are obviously in different phases of their investment. Whether they can turn into profit immediately is still a big challenge, not just to them, but to all the franchises throughout the world outside, as you say, the IPL. Mm-hmm. But I think the CPL, from the conversations that I have, are very confident that they're moving into profitability now.
Yes, good evening. Peter Adrian actually wrote a book on cricket and economy. Mm-hmm. He presented some very interesting schematics on a business model for West Indian cricket. And, you know, I think this is the opportune time for somebody powers that be like yourself to revisit the model, because he actually put a pretty interesting schematic on how to go about building profit. And the CPL actually it can be a stepping stone for some of his ideas. So I would actually urge him to have a look at that.
Mm-hmm. Johnny?
Yeah, no, I've not seen that report, but certainly, be very happy to review it and look into it. You know, we've got a plan that we think is it's going to see our sustainability, and as I've spoken about before, you know, we're looking to maximise our revenues, but also, you know, what we've got to do, and I've said it many times, is make sure that we're accessible and available as a product within the Caribbean, and that we're showcasing everything that's great about the Caribbean to the cricket-loving world. And I think we can do more to sell the region through cricket and boost tourism and the economies of all the different countries. And I think, we can do more to make sure that, you know, not just our professional cricket, but all our cricket is more accessible to fans and to people within the Caribbean, using not just digital channels and social media, but traditional television and radio, which is, you know, I still think we've got to address. And clearly, from a sort of business model point of view, we're looking to, as I mentioned before, launch our Windies Foundation. That's going to be, we feel, the vehicle to underpin all the financing and funding of our grassroots schools and community cricket within the region, which again, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of. You know, I think everyone thinks of us as an organisation and our men's senior team, but we're also responsible for governing cricket all the way down to schools and grassroots levels, and it's a really important part of the organisation, and something that we need to ensure we're adequately funding year on year.
No, before you go, of course you've got the Super 50 coming up pretty soon. Have you been able to work out exactly where the zones will be? This country will be hosting, or not quite?
We have, as an executive, we're taking a proposal to the board this week, so we hope to make an announcement by the end of this week on Super 50. As you know, it's moving from its the last few years where it's been in February, we're moving it to traditional height of November. So after the CPL, there'll be a month break for players to go back to their different franchises and prepare for the slightly longer format of the game. But due to the Women's World T20 taking place in November this year in the Caribbean, we're looking to hold it as a one-off in October. It's going to come online very quickly. And our plans are fully underway, and we hope to make an announcement on the two countries that we're hosting, where the final will be, along with the TV coverage, by the end of this week.
And just before you go, just recently in St. Vincent, in fact, just yesterday or so, you had the under-19. Congratulations to the Trinidadians. Some concern that, teams just having three matches. You've got the 50-over competition starting on Thursday.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, it's a really important regional tournament for us. I think we've got to be conscious of the amount of time the tournament takes of those summer holidays for people that are still in education and school. And it's a great opportunity for our younger players to demonstrate their talent. You know, the selectors are there looking at it. We've got an under-19 World Cup in the not too distant future, albeit, you know, we've only just had one. It's a hugely important part of the pathway for young cricketers to try and make their way to professional cricket and hopefully onwards to represent West Indies.
And finally, you've got the under-15s up in England, not doing badly at all, fighting the weather as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, they have suffered some of the effects of the bad English weather, and they've had a couple of training sessions, and I think one match washed out. But they won 2 days ago. Unfortunately, they did lose today. But some good performances, and just a great experience for the best under 15-year-olds that performed well in our regional tournament back in April. And you know, I'm sure they'll be enjoying themselves in England and enjoying playing in different conditions against different types of players, but also other experiences. And I know they're going to a game, a 2020 game tomorrow night at the Oval, and hopefully there'll be other experiences like that that will live, you know, long in their memories.
Mm. All right. Thanks, you, Johnny. Go back and watch your CPL match before you go up to Florida. Thanks very much for coming through and talking to us.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right. There you have it. Johnny Gray. Interesting comments. We interrupted you in terms of your assessment of what did you get through all the teams? Did you? I think you did. Basically, get through all the teams. What we can do is pause for business calls, and then we can just maybe go to 104 and get this score there in that match in Jamaica. Of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association with our very good friends at Bobbers Lottery for more than you sport. They've been carrying the cricket. Let's join the commentators for an update.
To have it done quite yet, and we have said about the struggles in terms of, as you said, in terms of the order. And so on, Darcy Short, we thought might have been coming in as well, persisted with Chapman. And we just mentioned how they fall away at the back 10 of their innings. And we're seeing an example of it here. Darren Sammy, the discarded captain, comes in now.
34 years old now, Darren Sammy, 46 matches, has scored 703 runs, average of 25.11, strike rate 136.24, a couple of half centuries to his name. By the way, 11 overs out the way now, 88 for 4 after that brilliant over from Adam Zam for a couple of wickets, and just 4 runs conceded in that last over. Meanwhile, Kieran Pollard has been there. He's on 9 from 10 deliveries, joined now by the former West Indies and former St. Lucia Stars captain, Darren Sammy. Very critical point of this contest for the St. Lucia Stars. As Iman Wazim is going to be bowling from the Georgia at the stand, he comes in to bowl to the right-handed Pollard, who gets this one out towards the lawn position, and he will cross for a comfortable single to take the score up to 89 for the loss of 4. Zampa, tremendous last over from the Australian leg spinner. As you're trying to have a look at the field now to Darren Sammy, there's going to be a short third man in position. That's the Shane Thomas. He's coming around to a wide short third man position. There's going to be a backward point on the boundary just in front of the Kingston Cricket Club stand. Extra cover short in place. There's a long off there as well. So that's the offside field. If Sammy can hit over extra cover, he's going to have success. Here is Imad Wazim, comes in to bowl to Sammy. Sammy is punching out towards the mid-on position. And there is no run for him.
Yeah, Ross Taylor, man in that area. I don't think Wazim will be flighting many deliveries at all. He's going to come down with pace, which is how he's known to bowl Wazim.
Long on, deep mid-wicket, deep backwards square leg in position as Darren Sammy comes forward.
Flat
bat
and
pad, not tightly together as the ball spins behind
you're
him.
You're a wicked man.
But he does well enough to show that he does have a certain measure of defensive capability. As the left-arm spinner was the ball to Sammy. Sammy comes forward, whips it out to Ross Taylor. That short mid-wicket was in the air for a little bit, but fell well short of him for Darren Sammy not to have had his heart in his mouth for too long.
A favourite area for Darren Sammy. Strong wrist in that area. Scores a lot of runs in the mid-wicket area.
Over number 12, 90 before the St. Lucia Stars as Sammy comes forward, drops it into the offside, can't get a run. He's playing a fine old test innings here, Darren Sammy, at the start of his inning.
Darren Sammy, Jamal has been a test innings. It's good to see him back in the game. I think before we close, this is going to be a very, very important game for the St. Lucia Stars, because I think if they lose it, and Reds Ferreira was making the point, they don't want to go home, you know, with a slim chance. So this is an important match for them, I think.
It's actually an important game for St. Lucia Stars. It's an important game for the cricket, Andrew, because we may very well see a case where the St. Lucian public may not be coming out in the numbers to actually support the team. It's an important game for Darren Sumner as well, hence why he may be batting the way he is trying to get a start. We noted on his Instagram today, Tino had a crack at him about 13 love. He was saying he's blessed, he's blessed, and he's highly favored. So one more, he steps up tonight.
You said 13 love.
Yeah, 13 love.
And not
30. Almost
30,
Andrew.
Indeed. So, Dr. Ford, this is an important match for them, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Last year, the crowd deserted them. And it's also an important match for the two guys, you know, in the middle. I think Pollard is at a stage in his career where he may be having doubts about his ability to continue at the international level. And Sammy may be a guy who's coming to grips with that being gone, but trying to contribute at the CPL level. But definitely with the players at their disposal to be as uncompetitive as they have been for so long, it's something that defies logic and you know the quality they have in their teams.
Mm. So overall, Jamal, you would say the standard has been good. If you had to identify a couple of concerns, what would you say?
My concern still would be the crowd in certain areas, especially St. Lucia. Guyana crowd improved significantly, and I'm hoping that the Tridents get a fair response or a very good response here. Overall, I wouldn't say that there are many concerns. I think the general standard of cricket is improving. The scores are 200 plus. It says a lot. And Philo Wallace alluded to it earlier in terms of the quality of surfaces in Trinidad.
Mm-hmm.
And 200-plus scores augurs well for T20 in terms of, you know, the curators are getting the job right, because obviously you can only see fantastic stroke play if you're on surfaces that allow for that. So I think the CPL is making strides in increments because, you know, we know when we have started, the scores were a little bit lower. We had less stars. We're now getting a couple of stars. It may be good fortune that we have who we have at this point instead of Steve Smith and David Warners. But the tournament is seen to be making steps towards improving, and it augurs well for the Caribbean.
We've had a few bad umpiring decisions so far.
Yeah.
But let's hope that will not continue.
All right. Well, thanks to Dr. Ford for coming through and talking to us. We want to make one or two other links, but we were not able to do that. That's all part of life, as they say. But we certainly enjoyed it. Of course, you can join us on 104 here in Barbados. They carry on the broadcast. The St. Lucia Stars, of course, they're very much up against a team from Jamaica, which is a good one, the Talawas, and they expect a good battle. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a bye tomorrow. Good night.
Well, there you have it, live from the Voice of Barbados, Mason Guest. Hope you enjoy it. Good night. God bless.